honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes on a weekend in which Americans of Japanese ancestry all around our country pause to reflect on what they went through during World War II. Robert Uesaka is helping all of us gain a little better understanding of that experience. Though Japanese Americans had initially been ruled unfit for service as enemy aliens classified 4C, by the time he turned 18 in March of 1944, the tune had changed. He was drafted and ended up in the famed 442nd Regimental Combat Team.
My contribution was minimal, but then those that were then from the very beginning and the first replacements, they did some heroic things. Like, it's unbelievable to think that 21 of those members got the Congressional Medal of Honor. You know, they rescued a battalion of the 36th Texas Division. They were trapped by the Germans and encircled, and their own division couldn't rescue them, but they asked the 442nd to lead it, and they got broke through and rescued them. And these are the accomplishments that, I mean, you can't help but really feel proud that they could do things like that. You know, the spirit was go for broke. That was really the spirit that people had, that they'd never back down. The irony of it is that we had more lost, killed and wounded personnel than the number that were rescued from that lost battalion. But, you know, my Army career is, I was real fortunate. I was drafted in 44, but as I said before, 10 of us were left behind at the induction center. And, you know, the 10 of us in 44, it was unheard of for people to be left behind in the States so long. The bulk of the 10 of us, you know, we finished our infantry basic, and as soon as we finished our infantry basic, they didn't ship us overseas. Groups were being sent overseas all the time as replacements for the 442nd, but we never were included in those. So finally they asked us to become medics, so we went through medical basic too. So I went through two basic trainings, and consequently I stayed in the States 10 months. When I got on the ship to go overseas, the war ended before we got to Italy.
So you're on the ship, and you get that news.
Yeah, we were just outside the Rock of Gibraltar there, or in the Mediterranean when the war ended.
Have you ever thought about, what if I wasn't one of the 10 that got left behind? What if I was with those other 95 that got taken?
Yeah, you know, the 95, the Battle of the Bulge was going when just before they got their training completed. They were shipped overseas right away, so they saw quite a few of the battles. And that was my group, and I missed that, so I didn't think anything of it, and I was, you know, but today I was thinking how fortunate I was.
I'll spell it out, not to be master of the obvious, but of those 95 guys, there are some who were wounded badly and some who didn't come home.
Yeah, of course, you know, most of them were strangers to me, but then that group, they're the ones that brought the colors home from Italy.
So you get there, the war's over. So you've gone through basic training, you've gone through medical training. Shouldn't be any more casualties if the fighting's over. What did they have you doing over there?
Well, when we got overseas, you know, it was the same thing when we were in Naples there, and the whole outfit shipped out to go to join the 442nd. I was left behind again. I was in the hospital. I had some kind of fever, high fever. They don't know what it was, but group shipped out, and I was the only one left behind. I had to travel by myself after I got out of the hospital and joined the outfit.
What'd you find when you got there?
Well, you know, we were newcomers, so we really didn't have to do too much. What was happening at the time was the 442nd was processing German prisoners. All the prisoners that they had captured, you know, they were trying to walk back to Germany. Lot of them, and then you had to go through their possessions and take the armament and everything away from them. And after a period of time of processing prisoners, we were put on R&R, and we went to Lake Como for R&R.
I don't want to miss anything that, you know, is relevant to you about all that, but I think one of the big questions, and maybe you can't even answer it, but when I think about the disruption to your family's life, we've already heard the six of you were never together in the same room again, lost all your crops and the 80 acres of farm that you had been leasing. And then what was the life you came back to when you got home from serving your country, when you came back home in that 442nd uniform? What next? And what did you think was next?
Well, when I got out of the Army, it was discharged. My two brothers and folks were living in Greeley, Colorado, but the weather there is, you know, it's real cold, so it was hard for my parents, who were really semi-invalids, and so we decided we'll move back to California. I got out in August of 46, and we moved back to California the following year. We wanted to settle in the Los Angeles area, but we couldn't find housing. So my two older brothers came up and down the state and found housing in Fresno. So this is how we ended up in Fresno. At that time, civil service and most of the job opportunities were closed to us, so all the thing we could do was work as farm laborers. And we did that for a year and decided we were going to sharecrop for the farm we were working on. He had grapes and plums, so we sharecropped 1 year with that. And that's when my mother passed away. In the following year, my dad passed away. My mother in 49, March, and my dad in March in 50. So we became orphans. My two older brothers, they farmed and all that. I worked as a farm laborer, and then I decided I'd take advantage of the GI Bill. So I went to school in L.A. I was working for a leather company part-time, and they wanted to open up another outlet in San Francisco. It was a wholesale leather company. They asked me if I would go up there and help open the outlet there, so I went. Then I had a girlfriend in L.A. at the time, so I asked for time off to pick her up, and we eloped in Vegas in 1952.
Well, and they always say, and maybe you even heard this at the time, you shouldn't elope because it's not going to last. So how'd that work out for you?
Well, we've been married 66 years, and so we haven't scratched each other's eyes out yet, so I guess it's working out well.
Have you ever wondered how different would my life have been if they just left us alone, if they let us keep us our farm, if they didn't kick us off that land and put us in a camp?
Oh, financially, we would have been a lot better off, because our parents could never own land or anything, but the children were becoming of age, and once you became of age, you could, you know, purchase land, purchase property, you had the right to vote and all that. So our family was just getting into that age bracket where my brother and sister, when the means were right, they could buy the land, and we were financially getting into that position where we could do that, but that went out the window. But the people that were left behind in Arizona, they all did well financially. If we had stayed there, we would have been as well off. But then circumstances being as it was, it didn't work out that way.
What are the things you're thankful for? Obviously, that's something that some people could look at and feel resentment or feel bitterness over. I don't sense that in the way you talk about these times. What are the things that you're thankful for when you reflect back on these last 75 years?
Well, you know, with the way situation was before the war and everything, we were forced to congregate together for protection. From the advent of the war afterward and everything, of camps, people spread out all over the United States. And that opened up a new perspective for us where we became more Americanized. People began to recognize us. Everything's turned out for the better through the hardships and all that. Now, if we had stayed in Arizona, I wouldn't have met my wife. I wouldn't have my children. And I wouldn't be here today either. So, you know, everything works out well.
I know what else you wouldn't have done. You wouldn't have been able to go with your daughter on an honor flight to Washington, D.C. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, that was tremendous. You have to really appreciate efforts that went into for the people that started the honor flights, how much preparation they had, how much sweat and tears they had to put into it to allow us to be able to enjoy the trips. And then I was fortunate, I got to see the 442nd and Kemp Monument that is erected there. It's a combination of the 10 internment camps that we were put in 442nd. So it's a combination of the two. We were thankful that they let us do that. And I was able to see that and the rest of the monuments there. Things through time change, the attitudes and everything change, and you can see that today versus what it was like back in the old days. It's amazing, you know. One day that country is your enemy, and in subsequent years they become your friend. Human nature is funny. But I think through the efforts of what the people in the, you know, the soldiers in the MIS in the 442nd has done, you know, their efforts has made it possible for us to be recognized as people that count.
I know you like to downplay what you did, but you were in the service and you were heading overseas and you were part of the 442. So collectively, with all these other Japanese-American veterans of that era, do you feel like you proved something? You proved your loyalty, or you proved what you were all about?
Well, you know, I never doubted the loyalty and all that, but I think we did prove something. I'm not sure if everybody's aware of it. Even to this day, you know, there's a lot of things that it's amazing what some of the guys have done, but then nobody knows about it. It's only those that are aware of it that know about it, but the general public, they don't even know.
Some people might not know that the government eventually said, hey, we're sorry. And they probably sent you something in the mail, right?
Yeah, you know, each evacuee that was alive at the time President Reagan signed the order that each evacuee would be compensated monetarily, and we were given $20,000. I had hoped that our parents would be remembered a little bit more, those who had passed, but then that was not to be. But then it was really good to hear that they recognized that the government had done something wrong.
And then, I mean, that was for anyone who was sent to the camps. But then, just in this last decade, they said, hey, all of you Nisei veterans who served, we're giving you the Congressional Gold Medal. What did that mean?
Oh, that was special. You know, I didn't feel like so much that I deserved it, but then I was sure thankful that those that really deserved it got it, because they were tremendous. The efforts they put into it and what they had accomplished and done, it's unbelievable.
Well, I have one more question, and like I said, feel free to add anything, and I do want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story and helping us understand what you just said. A lot of people don't know. The idea of a day of remembrance, it's something that happens across our country in the Japanese-American community this time of year every year. What do we need to remember? What's important to hold on to and not let go of?
Well, you know, it's tragic that our government and our president decided to sign that order to put citizens and everybody, men, women, and children, into the camps. This day of remembrance is to let the world know that it should never happen again. It's just not right that people are subjected to such trauma, you know, that their life is uprooted and all that, that for no real cause, and for people to remember that it still could happen. We hope it doesn't. And this is a reminder that it should not happen.
The bottom line from Robert Uesaka. He'll turn 93 next month in Clovis, California. Don't forget to go online to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos and video related to today's episode. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.